This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to iFanboy Talksplode with Jamie S. Rich and Mike Norton, the creative team behind It Girl. Welcome to another edition of iFanboy Talksplode. My name is Ron Richards, and this time around I'm talking with writer Jamie S. Rich and artist Mike Norton, who are the creative team behind It Girl, coming soon from Image Comics. It Girl is a character coming out of the Mad Men universe, created by Mike Allred, and this first issue marks a new ongoing series written by Rich and drawn by Mike Norton, chronicling the adventures of It Girl while Mad Men and some of the other characters are out in space. You might know Mike Norton from lots of his work, and he's been a longtime favorite artist of ours. And I've also enjoyed Jamie S. Rich's work at Oni and other publishers over the years. Really great guys, clearly like working together. So let's hear what they've got to say. I am here with the creative team behind It Girl. We got writer Jamie S. Rich. How you doing, Jamie?
Very good.
And superstar artist Mike Norton.
Eisner
Hi,
nominated.
I'm a superstar?
Eisner That's nominated awesome. Mike Norton.
Oh, cool. I've always wanted to be a superstar.
Well, you've made it. Your time has come. So, but we are here to talk about the upcoming launch of your guy, the new book you guys are working together, It Girl from Image Comics.
Yep.
So this is a Mike Allred property. This is a character coming out of the Mad Men universe. How did this project kind of come together?
It kind of started as like almost a half joke. Like, I didn't ever really think Allred was going to go for it. And so in my head, I had been thinking about it, but I hadn't really ever brought it up until one time we were hanging out at the comic book shop. And I mean, I always noted how well Mignola keeps the Hellboy universe going, even when he's not necessarily like writing and drawing it. And that was sort of my suggestion of like, well, you know, you're doing iZombie. Why don't you have your BPRD? And it sort of tumbled out of there. So, and It Girl just seemed the natural choice out of the cast of who should sort of helm her own series.
Cool. Yeah, has anyone actually written any of Allred's Mad Men characters before? I know other people have drawn it, but has anybody else written it?
There's been a couple of short stories, but short stories only. Like his brother Lee wrote one, and there's like a story by Darwin Cook and Jay Bone in the last Madman Atomic series, and then actually Joel Jones and I did one in Madman Atomic Comics number 16. I can't remember if anybody did any shorts before that. Yeah, usually it was just when we would do specials, we would occasionally would invite people to do like 8-pagers on their own, and that's really just been it. Nothing of this sort of length has been tackled before by other writers.
Right, and probably for those who don't know, I mean, Jamie, you've worked with Mike for a while now, right?
Yeah, I became his editor at Dark Horse in like 96 or 97. And the first two books we did together were the Superman, Madman, Hullabaloo, and Red Rocket 7. Wow. And so after I left Dark Horse to go to Oni, we published the first couple of Madman trades that Kitchen Sink used to have and did some specials. And then he started self-publishing The Atomics, which I edited as well as on a freelance basis. And I've been editing all of his non-DC Marvel work ever since.
Cool. So it seems like of all candidates to kind of take a stab at writing something from the Mad Men universe, you were kind of ideal.
Yeah, I mean, I have a pretty good working knowledge of everything, though. It was interesting going back and reading comics that we published like 10, 12 years ago and reminding myself of things. And even so far, Mike Norton has asked questions that I'd never thought about. Like, the big one was, what's in Hit Girl's poster?
I always wanted to know.
Yeah, I never even thought about it. I assumed she'd
know before I wanted to know before I drew her, but for this, I mean, I had to have her. I had to know for this one. And I was like, why? Does she need them? Do I need to draw these?
So what's in the holster?
It's like her carrying case. It's like her purse.
Okay.
So I think it's issue 7 or 8 that I drew somebody going through it and being like, what is all this crap?
Nice. So Jamie, you talked to Mike, you convinced him to do it. How did Norton get it? Norton, how did you get involved in the project?
Jamie asked me.
That's simple.
Yeah,
You're not doing anything, are you? What are you eating? You want to draw some comics?
It was right after San Diego last year, I think. It was, we were sitting around Trickster most of the time, and we had talked about projects and what we were doing and stuff, and I think we were talking about we hadn't done anything together, and then Jamie emailed me right after, and I didn't expect it was going to be a Madman thing. That was just kind of extra awesome, so...
Yeah, I'd been sitting on the proposal and hadn't really had an artist for it, and I don't think I'd pitched it to Eric Stevenson yet. So it just, once the idea of having Mike Norton came around, it just seemed natural.
Right. So without kind of inflating Mike's ego too much as he's on the podcast now, what was it about his art that made you think that he'd be a good fit?
Well, he's just got such a sort of classic and clean illustration style that is very much in the sort of in the Allred aesthetic. You can look at like a lot of the stuff that we've Allred and I have done as far as who we've had as guests. You could probably guess a lot of what he's brought to the table versus like the weirder stuff that I brought along. Like Renee French is still like my dream. Like I want her to do a Madman story. But there's also, like, my general aesthetic tends to be these, like, really nice looking, well, like, just classic illustration, classic comic book ink lines. I mean, that's why I love Joel Jones. Tanchi Zanyich was one I brought to All Red for our last special, who just has such a great Toth influence. And that's what I love about Mike's stuff. It's clean. It's just, you can read it clearly with, and the action is really fantastic, as well as all the acting. So yeah, it just was a win-win.
So Mike, how does that feel to hear that analysis of your work?
It's awesome. I don't sit around and wait for people to say nice things about me, but it's super nice when they do. I'm just super excited to do it. As much as he said I fit into the Allred aesthetic, he was a big influence on me when I started drawing professionally. I mean, I had all these influences when I first started drawing, but when I started actually making comics for money, I mean, right after Red Rocket 7 had come out, I met him at Wizard World Chicago and told him what a big deal he was, and we got my signed Red Rocket 7 comic and stuff like that, which I'm sure he doesn't remember at all. But he's a huge influence. This is kind of, I mean, I don't sit around and think about it too much, or I probably would get really intimidated, but it's exciting.
And that's one thing I'm curious, because Mike, you and I have talked a lot about your kind of art and the kind of the jobs you've been on and your kind of art style. And, you know, you definitely have your own kind of Mike Norton style, but you've also been able to flex that for each and every different project. So as you approach this, did you try to flex more in an All Red direction, or were you just like, okay, I'm just going to do my thing and interpret it how I would?
It's funny about that, because, I mean, I really have, in the last couple of years, most of my Marvel and DC work has been me trying to pretend to be somebody else, and I've learned how to draw like myself along the way, kind of. I keep what I want, and then I, you know, get rid of the rest. But the funny thing about this is, you know, like I said, Allred was such a influence at the beginning as it was, that it's kind of like when I met Joe Rubenstein, and I worked with him on Green Arrow. And when I first met him, I told him, I don't know if we work together so well, because I learned how to draw comics from all the comics you inked. You know, it's kind of like a full circle thing. I don't feel like I'm trying to draw like Mike. And it's just that he's already influenced me, so he kind of already made me draw the way that I draw. So I feel like it's already in that neighborhood anyway. It's all his fault either way, you know. So I copy him to look more like him, or I'm copying him because it's just the way I draw now. So
yeah, I mean, I kind of feel the same. Like, I always joke that I'm trying on my Mike Allred suit when I write these scripts, but it just felt natural. I think it was actually when I was writing for him, we did four pages in the Liberty Comics annual I edited, and it was a Mr. Gum four pages, and it just was so easy to write, like, and hear it in my head and see him drawing it, that I feel like just playing with his toys is just, like, I've already been practicing for it somehow. Whereas, like, Norton, when I worked for Marvel and DC, I felt like I was trying to fit in. And I didn't really end up coming out of the experiences feeling like myself. And so this has been just one of the more sort of freeing experiences. We've been having a blast. And the notes we get back are always just like, super cool. Yeah. That's all we have. Like,
it's like Madman writing the email.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all you need. You're like, all right.
Yeah, I was going to ask how involved Mike has been with the project, because, you know, I know we've seen some, you know, the big name creators, when they kind of let other people play with their toys, some creators, you know, like Rob Liefeld's staying away from, you know, Profit and all that stuff, letting them, you know, Brandon Graham and other guys go with it. It sounds like Allred's involved in reviewing what you guys are doing, or?
Yeah, he's just digging it. Like, I just keep sending it to him, and he just, like, for him, I suppose it's like when I get pages from an artist, like, to see this stuff happening, it's just exciting for him. He feels flattered that we want to do it. And I know he's willing to give notes and rewrite, because on the short Joel and I did, he tweaked a lot of the cadaver's dialogue. So, yeah, I know he's not afraid of saying, like, this isn't exactly right, but so far he's just been like, the best cheerleader.
Cool, yeah. I love his enthusiasm. Just a few times I've interviewed him and I've gotten to hang out with him, he's so enthusiastic, so I can only imagine what it's like to collaborate.
He needs a hotline for, like, whenever someone's getting, like, sad on Twitter about comics, like, they can call him and make them feel great about their career.
So with Mad Men being such a kind of indie kind of property, maybe not everybody kind of knows about it. So, you know, kind of Jamie, can you kind of fill in folks who might not know who It Girl is? Like, who, you know, who is she? What is the premise? Where do we come into with the beginning of your guys' series?
Well, old school Mad Men readers might remember that he started off having these nemeses in Snap City that were the mutant street beatniks. And they were street beatniks who'd been mutated by an alien goo in the first couple of issues. And they were always fighting with Mad Men. Midway through the run, when Mike left Dark Horse and started self-publishing the Atomics, what he did was he took those characters and they realized that instead of just having been turned into sort of guys with really nasty skin, they actually had superpowers and were able to morph themselves. And so they became their own superhero team and started teaming up with Mad Men. And It Girl was the last to kind of join. She's the youngest. And her sister Lava Lass was one of the original main characters. But she emerged through the series as a focal character. And so we've sort of picked up from that idea of she's the one who's sort of learning who she is, learning how to, and making it about learning how to be a hero. Her power is she can touch anything and absorb its properties, from like being able to touch a bird and grow feathers and wings to touching a rock and turning to stone. And so that's been a lot of fun, just to sort of figure out what I can make her pick up and use. And so while Madman and Mr. Gum and Metal Man, who's It Girl's boyfriend, are in outer space touring with Red Rocket 7, we're focusing on the remaining Atomics left back on Earth.
Cool. So, and what does the kind of cast of characters look like? Who's joining It Girl?
The main two are Black Crystal and the Slug. And then there's a character that sort of merged in Madman Atomic comics named Carla, who we've hardly seen anything of yet. So I'm kind of working on integrating her. Dr. Phlegm is around. She's basically going to replace a Madman as this mad scientist's guinea pig. Like, he sort of funds everything they do and gives them the place to live. So she starts becoming the focal point for his experiments or getting him things he needs. And so all of that cast, basically all the main cast that's left on Earth, is going to return for this series. And then we'll create some characters of our own as well.
Cool. So if you had to, you know, like, it's funny because I've always kind of struggled with Mad Men in terms of recommending it to people, because, you know, I end up describing it as kind of, you know, like pop superhero comics and like kind of more modern, kind of out there kind of takes. Are you keeping that same tone that's already been set with it? I mean, yes, it's superhero, but it's kind of out there, you know?
Like, yeah, to a degree. My thing has always been that Mad Men seems to be a variety of things to different people, depending on at which point they started reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Because like it started off really dark and twisted, and then it got super poppy, and then it got kind of philosophical and experimental. And the Atomic series itself was very straightforward Silver Age superhero comics.
Yep.
And I know Allred was inspired a lot by Eric Larson and Savage Dragon, which is why they have that crossover in the middle of it. So that was the main tone I was going for. I wanted it just to be accessible superhero comics, a good time adventure stories, and something that anybody could pick up at any time. Like, I think about when I used to go into 7-Eleven as a kid, I would just buy whatever was on the racks. And even if I'd never read, I think Alpha Flight, I think I started reading like issue 8 or something and had no idea what I was getting into. But you just, it sort of just sucks you in, and it's inviting enough that you don't have to worry about this big back history.
and that's a big thing. Not to get off of It Girl or Mad Men, but I harp on this as we do our podcast and do the whole comic thing that we've been doing for these past, you know, years. People always seem so hung up on, you know, where do I, you know, I can't buy a book when it's already out there, or I don't know what happened before. And I feel like, you know, like I did the same thing. I bought X Factor at issue like 48 and I just went with it.
Yeah.
You know, and part of the fun was talking with friends and going to the comic shop and finding out what had happened. Like, what happened to that?
Like, the preview they ran of It Girl in the Image Comics Free Comic Day had, I think, like 2 pages that told you everything you needed to know about who the skunk was and what that history was, and like that was it. That's all you really needed. And I tried to write it like you've never read the Atomic series before.
Right.
And I think that's like a good approach for the whole thing. I think every few issues when we have a new story, anybody could just start right there.
Right. So Mike, you mentioned that you're a fan going back to Red Rock and Seven. Like, what is Mad Men to you? I mean, is it, what period did you jump on in?
I came in and out like all through it. I mean, the old Tundra stuff I picked up just because, I think I've said this in another interview, but I think that his character design, just the costume alone, was so iconic. I hadn't seen anything like that since like Steve Ditko, you know, came up with all of those characters, you know, like for Charlton and more for Marvel. But I had to pick it up, and it was weird. And it wasn't at all what I thought it would be, but it was so unique, you know. It's not like anything else, that especially at that time. And then it became not nostalgic, but much more like the Silver Age stuff, like Jamie was talking about. And I enjoyed that. I think that was a good fit. It was a little harder for me recently when it got more trippy, you know. But the characters, I mean, nobody makes such unique and weird characters like that, you know, right now. And I keep my toe in it now. I haven't been regularly following it, but I pick it up every once in a while. And our series is much more, I describe it narrative. It's much more narrative than Mad Men has been lately, you know. Right. So it's much more of a comic book series. It's been really fun in that regard. I get to, like he was describing the Savage Dragon thing. It's much more that sort of thing, and it's that's tremendously appealing on my end.
Right. Yeah. No. It's because I was going to ask you what visual direction you were going in, and I wouldn't have expected narrative, but that totally makes sense.
Well, no. I mean, it's a straight up comic book, and this is the fun part of my day. You know, I'm drawing other comics and stuff, but most of those I'm concentrating a lot more on the atmosphere and the, you know, what am I going to do on this page? It's going to really freak somebody out or something like that. But in this, yeah, I'm doing some straight up superhero comics that are freaking fun to draw.
Cool.
So, I mean, this is the fun part of my day. I say that this is because I'm drawing it right now while we're talking. So.
You multitasking. So I mean, I personally really loved the last iteration of Mad Men, the really kind of experimental one.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you're doing straight up comic telling, you know, but are you weaving in any of the postmodern kind of stuff in there, or are you just going to keep it pretty straight?
Well, I mean, it's a Mad Men comic, so I mean, it can't not have some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. The credo's kind of just been like anything goes.
Yeah.
So I mean, Allred will do anything in a comic, and that's sort of how I've tried to approach it. Of like, if I can imagine it, let's do it. I mean, I know there's an issue coming up that stands alone that was sort of inspired by some of the issues he's done that are just straight action. There was the one in Mad Men Atomic Comics, I think it was number 9, where it was all one giant panel. And the character, it was almost like an old Hanna-Barbera animation background where the characters were moving through one huge background, and every page played end to end was just one long storyboard. And so we're not doing it quite to that degree, but just this idea that you start at panel 1 and there's a threat and you carry it all the way through to the end. was something that I tried to approach as well. But I don't think we can even get close to the experiments he did the last time around. So let him do that.
Yeah. So now in terms of, I think it's funny because It Girl coming out at an interesting point because, you know, especially given in the world of comics, not many comics are fronted by a woman character, by a female character, you know, like, you know, Marvel's got no one that's, you know, a solo book, and DC's got Wonder Woman and Batwoman, a couple things like that. But how do you feel about introducing, not introducing, but bringing a strong female lead to title a book?
Luckily, I hadn't thought about it until we were far enough in. I think it was Jennifer DeGuzman at Image, the first one to say it. Yep. And I was like, oh, I guess we are doing that. I don't know, because I mean, probably because of all the people I work with, and I work with as many women cartoonists as I do men, it sort of just seems natural to me that the cast is diverse.
Yep.
I mean, Joelle Jones and I are working on a series that has a female lead. The book that I have with Natalie Norgat that I think Oni's going to be talking about in San Diego, we started off thinking of, like, well, we want to have an equal cast. I mean, I'm serializing a novel online that's from a female point of view. So at this point, it's not even a question for me. It just kind of is what happens.
Right. And a lot of your past work has been similar in that. I mean, Nick, you've done a lot of the romance stuff and things like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I like the ladies. So they're in the comments. Like, I keep trying to, you know, I'm trying to throw as many as, so that I challenge Norton to draw sexier women.
So, well, I need to, I think. I think I need to learn.
There's that girl in Battlepug that doesn't wear any clothes, but
yeah.
Well, so Mike, has that been a challenge to draw a book from a, you know, with a strong female lead? Or,
well, I've never really considered myself the best at drawing women, so I kind of this is kind of forcing me to do that. Tim Seeley on our other book, he loves the ladies as well, so he had to go and make the lead in that comic a woman too. Well, actually, there are two women, so there's got to be women all over the place. So I had to learn how to do it. And I think, like Jamie was saying, I don't even really think about it. It's kind of a natural thing. But until you mentioned it, I didn't even realize that there weren't any. You know, it just doesn't even, I don't even think about it. So that's kind of weird. But yeah, it's I'm not going to lie. It's super fun. There's a reason I made a maul a naked woman, you know, in Battlepug. I like to draw women, sure. It's not to sound pervy or anything, but I mean,
most of the women cartoonists I work with usually end up drawing everything way sexier than it was written.
Interesting.
The classic always is in You Have Killed Me, there's a point where in the script it's described as like a two shot where you see the detective checking out the girl's legs, and Joelle drew it as a the detective not in panel, and it's a butt shot. It's a very, very short skirt. And I was like, you know, I'm going to get crap for this. Like, they're going to blame me. But, like, a lot of the women I work with, they love it when, yeah, someone like Maul shows up. So
yeah, maybe it works. Yeah. So have you guys worked together before this project? Or
no, this was the first time. This was, like, the thing. When Jamie was talking about doing stuff, I really didn't think it would be something like this. I was expecting more of the stuff I had read from him in the past, more of a, you know, a slice of life, maybe even a romance kind of thing. But this was kind of, I think, something new for both of, well, more for him than me, actually, even. So
yeah, I think I've seemed to be the wild card in this scenario of people not, or being more surprised that I'm doing this kind of story. And over the last couple of years, I've been trying more and more to experiment with genre. It was You Have Killed Me that really changed my point of view, and that I was always a little scared of other genres because I didn't think I could measure up. And then I discovered, well, you can find yourself and your voice within these the confines of
exactly genre. Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, that's exactly what I was talking about when the, you know, working on all the other stuff I did at Marvel and DC and not knowing exactly how I drew. I mean, an aside, to go on a tangent, but you know, I find the same thing in like Jamie McKelvey's art, you know, where he had this thing where it was just, he really excels at sort of, you know, quiet moment, personal, you know, slice of life stuff. But now he's doing these Marvel things and he's being forced to draw action and stuff. And you don't think of him doing that. And he's gotten a whole lot better at that. And I think that's only going to make him better at drawing the other stuff too, because I think there was an issue of Phonogram they put out after, right after he started doing some Marvel stuff. And it was, I could tell he had gotten better at everything, not just the one thing he was really good at.
And so how many issues in on It Girl are you guys on so far?
I'm about a little over halfway issue 4.
Well, yeah. So you're in the groove of your 4 issues. Have you guys looked back as issue 1's, you know, about to come out and that sort of thing? Do you see a progression just in those 4 issues yet, or?
I don't know. I might be a little too close to it still. Yep. I don't know if I notice. I hope that it's at least consistent.
I don't know if I've seen, like, again, I'm super close to it too, and I'm seeing it in pretty rapid chunks as opposed to being able to step away from it. But I mean, I feel like it just keeps getting, it feels like it's getting better and better and more comfortable. I know from a writing standpoint, it is. I've written 11 scripts now.
Yeah.
So I'm deep into it, but I do feel like it just continues to feel more and more natural, I think, for both of us.
Yeah.
Cool. So when you started working together, Mike, did you explain to Jamie how much you like to draw rubble and chain link fences and things like that to make sure they got the scripts?
The chain link fences, I think you're lying about that. I don't think I ever said I like drawing chain link fences. You said that before somewhere.
I remember you once complaining on one of your rants years ago about drawing
fences. Yeah, I don't like drawing them. Drawing horses, but nobody likes drawing horses. But
Joel does.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm.
Nico once complained that Spell Checkers 1. He's like, oh man, I can't draw any more lockers. Why does everything take place in the
lockers? Lockers are the worst.
And then the next book I put it, I was like, well, okay, well, they're on the football stadium. He's like, I don't ever want to draw bleachers ever again.
Oh, bleachers are the worst. Oh man, you made me draw bleachers in the beginning of issue 3, and that was the worst.
The NASCAR bleachers
is the worst.
Is it just the repetitive nature of drawing seats at the season?
Yeah, it's something that the stuff that's it's deceptively simple. I mean, it's one of those things where you just think about it and you're just like, oh, it's just stair steps. But then you draw it, and it's so easy when you get it wrong to notice. No. So you have it's so annoying. It's not that it's super hard to draw, but it's super hard to draw convincingly. And lockers are the same way. It's just like these are just rectangles on a wall. But if you draw them wrong, they just look like rectangles on a wall. You know, so it's kind of annoying. But
writers are evil because we're just like, so there's a crowd scene here, and that's about as long as it takes us to tell you there's a crowd scene.
Well, Jamie, as a writer, do you like, and when you turn over the script, do you know that, like, oh, he's going to hate the scene because of this? Or
yeah, I've been teasing him for a couple of months because issue 7, it's like, so how are you drawing goats? There's a herd of goats running through this.
I really like drawing animals. I'm not going to lie about that. That'll be fun.
We'll see. Ask him again after he's done.
Well, and so what is this? So I mean, that kind of speaks to your guys' kind of process. So what is that, you know, like has the back and forth been? I mean, is it pretty much, you know, Jamie writes it, Mike, you draw it, or are you guys collaborating, or how, you know, how tightly are you
working? It's pretty much straightforward that way. I mean, this is, you know, Jamie writes the story and I draw it. There's a couple of times where, you know, I'll rejigger the way a scene like is laid out or something like that, but other than that, I mean, it's the division of labor is pretty much cut and dry. I think there's just one little bit in the issue I'm doing now that's been pretty fun, where he suggested something and I kind of just went with it, and I think it's one of the funnier things we've done in the book so far. So I'm eager for people to see that and see if they like it.
Yeah, see, I try to leave some of the stuff open and say, sort of give suggestions, but let him design. I know at one point I think I did ask if there was any kind of villains or things you wanted to say, and he gave the Mike Norton shrug that you've heard a couple times on this podcast. This
Mike Norton shrug is true. There's like, what do you call it, impressions going around of me all over. But no, I tell this to writers all the time, and I think I told you this at when we were at Trickster. I like being surprised by the writer. It's like asking somebody what your favorite movie or your favorite song is when somebody asks you, what do you like drawing? And I'm just like, I don't want to draw what I like drawing. I want you to surprise me and kind of like, I have to think about what I'm drawing. Gail Simone was really good at that when we were doing Adam. I'd get a script and I was like, huh, wasn't expecting that, you know, that kind of thing. So,
And that's why when I get the pages, I don't immediately run to my script and double check. Like I only pull out the script again when I'm checking to make sure everything made it into the lettering. Because sometimes they miss a balloon or whatever. I usually just try to look at every page that comes through fresh, and it's a surprise. It's often a surprise to me. The thing he's talking about at number four, I completely forgot about. So suddenly I get these pages and I was like, what is that? And I remember, like, oh yeah, I asked for that.
Well, I guess that level of surprise with each other's work is nice. That's good. You don't want to get too close to it. It's nice that you're able to still enjoy it when after you've written it, now seen it drawn. It's
like, oh, I love that part of this. Yeah. I mean, the longer I do comics, the more I like the collaborative nature of it. I mean, it's not like, you know, now I'm doing a lot more creator-owned stuff. You'd think that I'd be more in the, nope, this is the way I want to do it. But I like collaborating even more now. I like seeing how, now that I'm, you know, especially now that I'm starting to write my own thing, I love seeing other people draw stuff. It's such, to equate it back to the music thing, it's like, it's why you get tired of listening to your own iTunes after a while. You want to listen to a programmed radio station or something just because you want to be surprised. So,
right. Cool. So, so kind of, you know, wrapping up the kind of It Girl conversation. So, you know, if, you know, Matt, you know, new number one issue, kind of, you know, a character with a bit of a legacy, if there was one thing that you guys kind of wanted new readers to possibly take away from it, like what can they expect or what would you want them to know when they're making that decision if they should pick it up or not?
I would just like that for It Girl to be their new favorite hero, male or female. Just, you know, this is the character I can't wait to see what she does next.
Yeah, I would say, if you're looking, and I hear this all the time on Twitter and Facebook and at comic conventions, if you're looking for a good, fun superhero, and especially a female protagonist, like everybody complains that there isn't anymore, you should really pick up this book. I mean, because it's got all of that, and it's, you know, it's well written. I like to think it's well drawn, but I mean,
it's
it's drawn, and I like to think it's well written. So.
There's no doubt it's fun. I mean, I know it's fun, so I hope people will want to keep buying it. And, you know, put their money where their mouth is as far as that goes.
Yeah,
and we're charging, you know, it's $3 an issue. It's at the $2.99. It's 24 pages each issue of story and art, like, yeah, every time.
He makes me draw an extra 2 pages for everybody.
Because I never accepted when it became 22 pages.
So while Marvel and DC are contracting down to 20 and 18 pages, you guys are going up to 24.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not Brian K. Vaughan and making, like, Fiona Staples draw, like, what was it, an 80-page first issue? So I'm not that bad. It's 2 pages an issue.
No, you're spreading it out over the whole series.
Right. Eventually, it'll be a little equal.
Well, I think that's a great point, Mike, that you made, is that, you know, a lot of people are complaining that there's nothing new, or that they want something different, yeah, or whatever, and yet, you know, this is an example of something different, and give it a shot. So, you know,
yeah, I'm trying to do that all this year, is make the comics everybody's complaining that there aren't. So if they don't buy them, well, I'm just going to be angry and go work Marvel and DC again.
Yeah, I was going to say your spirit hasn't been broken yet by them not buying them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But so that's a kind of good segue. So Mike, so when I heard that you were the ongoing artist for this, I kind of did a double take and I started adding up on one hand all the projects that you were associated with.
A lot of people do that, and I don't blame them. I think Jamie did that too. But
at one point, I was like, you know, we should build in some fail safe. And he's like, no, I got it. Like, I think we're safe.
He is so worried about me, and I know that he is, but it's okay.
How is it okay? So what else are you working on, and what does your schedule look like?
It's not as bad. It is bad, but it's not as bad as everybody thinks. Because, I mean, I, in some form or another, since I was exclusive at DC, have worked on more than one project at a time. Right. So it's not out of the realm of possibility for me to do two books a month. Now that's a kind of a standard, and it's starting to grind on me, but it's not as crazy as everybody thinks it is. So that's the core that I'm doing is this and Revival, my other Image series.
Right.
There are other things, but those are here and there, and they're, you know, not as regular, and plus there are other circumstances that I have, you know, I'm not either not announced or not scheduled yet, so that I can get this stuff done. So it's not as terrible as everybody thinks that I'm not going to jump off a building or anything.
Well, it just makes me laugh because I remember, and I'm going a little personal and off the record, but I think last time I was in Chicago, remember we were hanging out and we were talking about your work, and you're kind of like, we're talking about what 2012 is going to look like, and you're like, yeah, no, I don't know what I'm going to do, and you know, like, I got to figure out what I'm going to work on, and now I'm just like, six months later, it seems like you're full.
I feel stupid about that stuff because, I mean, I do it. It's an embarrassment of riches on my part. I'm very lucky to be, I guess, in demand as I am. But I don't know what to say about it. I'm just really thankful and appreciative that I get to do this stuff. And I like making comics. It's all I really want to do. I don't like going out and drinking and doing, even though I do drink, but I don't like to party or, you know, I play video games and I draw. That's all I do. So I just want to make more comics. And I, you know, as long as my girlfriend doesn't get annoyed by it, I'm fine. So don't worry about me, everybody. Get off my back.
Well, that was my reaction back when we had that conversation, I think last year, when I just laughed and I'm like, oh, you're going to be fine because you've been one of our favorite artists for so long. And it's great, you know, like it's great to see, you know, Revival coming out, now this coming out and all the Battle Pug kind of,
I'm very happy creatively right now. And I really appreciate it when people say that about me. Thanks.
Okay. The day Mike Norton can't get work is the day this industry needs to just stop and go home.
So
Battle Pug updates. He doesn't say this, but Battle Pug updates every Monday.
Yeah, every Monday.
It's going to be out the first Wednesday of July, so next week.
Yeah.
Mike Norton's The Curse comes out in October from Oni Press.
Well, thank you. Well, geez. Are you my agent now?
Artists are terrible at plugging themselves.
Well, I didn't know we were at that part yet.
Well, so you've got Revival come starts. When is that Revival?
Revival comes out right, I think it's the week after Battle Pug. So it comes out the 11th or something.
Right in time for San Diego.
Right in the week of San Diego it comes out, yeah.
Yeah, it's good timing.
Yeah, July is the start of the snowball, so from there on, it's like that scene in Indiana Jones, so I got to keep in front of the boulder.
All right, and Jamie, do you have any other projects like your girl coming up or that you can talk about?
Yeah, I'm finishing up online. I've been serializing a novel that I wrote a while ago called Bobby Pins and Mary Janes, and it's at bobbypinsandmaryjanes.com, and it's free. There's two more installments to go, so if you jump on now, you can pretty much get the whole thing. It's a comic book. It's a novel set in the comic book industry, and has actual comic book script in it, and the blog has all kinds of process stuff. So that, I guess, finishes up and is the beginning of my snowball. And August 8th is It Girl in the Atomics number 1. I have a project with Natalie Norgat at Oni Press that I believe is, like, we've talked about it, but I think it's finally officially going to be announced at San Diego.
Cool.
and that'll be this fall. And I have other projects with them, one with an artist named Dan Christensen that should be early 2013. I have a big, big project with Joelle Jones. As soon as she's done with her book with Colin Bunn, she brought me a brilliant idea that she had had, and we've been developing it together, and we're going to be co-writing, and she's going to be drawing. And she's that's
amazing.
Yeah, she's just gotten more and more phenomenal. There's this thing that she sent me today that I don't think I can talk about, but it's just this amazing piece of design work that is, I think, going to be really, really influential for her career. And so it's great working with her now too, as she's sort of writing as well, and we're the free exchange of ideas we're having, because we live in the same town and we hang out all the time, and it's been sort of such a fruitful collaboration. Well, and then Spellcheckers 3, so that's all going to be in the next 12 months or so.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the one thing, Jamie, about your career that I've been impressed by, is it seems that you work with some great artists.
I have very high standards, I'd say. I'd always say, as an editor, that was like the only thing you could really sort of give me credit for, was that I had really good taste and hired the right people and let them do what they wanted to do. So, you know, I don't hire artists lightly.
Right. So, but you settled for Mike, so that's...
Thanks for...
I was just hoping to work with the other guys, with Crank and Alan Asalakwa.
Yep.
stealing the Battle Pug team.
Yeah, you're leveraging your Battle Pug crew, right, Mike? For your girl?
Yeah, I take them. They're, it's like Entourage. I take them everywhere now.
Nice.
Am I the only guy on the team without facial hair?
What's that?
Am I the only guy on this team that doesn't have facial hair?
Yeah, probably. Theirs is a little less ridiculous than mine, but.
And so we forgot to mention where and people can find Battle Pug at battlepug.com, right?
Uh-huh.
That is just a great character design. Isn't it?
Are you fishing for credit?
I mean, Jamie, weren't you impressed when he came out with Battle Pug? You're like, wow, that is just great.
Well, anything pugs. It's not like he designed a pug. It looked that funky for a long time.
All right, I'll change the header to Mike Norton and Ron Richards.
Thank you. No, I love seeing the wacky dumb idea that you and I joked about becoming a book. Like, it's amazing. So congratulations.
You guys deserve credit. I mean, I put it on the website. I was like, they forced me to come up with something. This is their fault. This is what you get when iFanboy asked me to come up with something.
But what I think is interesting is that we forced you to come up with something, and then you ran with it, and it's been like clockwork every week. You know,
it's super well. Yeah, we haven't missed a week so far, and I'm very, you know, knock on wood, but it's one of my favorite things I've ever done, just because it has been so magical that way. I mean, nothing has messed up, so I kind of feel like it must be the thing I was meant to do, because, you know, it's been so easy, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, when it came out, I remember looking at it and thinking, it's like, geez, that's one of those million-dollar ideas right there. Like, I'm not being facetious. It's like the same. There's a local guy here in Portland, and he had it in DHP now, but Mike Russell does this thing, Sabretooth Vampire.
I love that.
It was the same thing. It's like, dude, you got to ride this one, because it is like, that's just one of those ideas that you only hit on every once in a while. And it's such awesome. an easy to grasp concept. It's so much you could do with it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I love it when people actually, because you sit around the bar and you talk and you throw out ideas, but then actually sitting down and putting pen to paper, and how long has it been going for, Mike? It's been a year? It's been more than a year, right?
A little over a year now. Yeah.
It's amazing.
But I mean, that comes from, you know, the guys in my studio are like that. And, you know, Tim Seeley and all these guys, I mean, no idea is wasted around these guys. It kind of teaches you how to conceptualize in a way. It's a course on conceptual design working in the studio. So
interesting.
Those guys helped me out a lot.
Cool. Awesome. So everybody should check out It Girl. It comes out in August from Image Comics. And I know, you know, being a big Madman fan, it was already on my pull list. But, I mean, I think it's definitely for – even if you've never read a Madman issue, I think you definitely – people should check it out because clearly you guys are two great creators. So it's excited to see what comes out of it.
Thanks.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time. So thank you very much, Mike and Jamie.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Three, two. And a big thanks goes out to Jamie and Mike for chatting with us about It Girl. You can, if you haven't already pre-ordered it from your retailer, do it. It comes out this August, and you'll be able to add it to your pull list come this August on iFanboy.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/iFanboy and on Facebook at facebook.com/iFanboy. And go to iFanboy.com for all the great articles, podcasts, and everything else that's going on in the world of comics. So until next time, enjoy your comics.